Hi, this is Dean Jacobs from Tarani Motors. We are so thrilled to be sponsoring Sand Hill Stories on KVSH Radio. We think this will be a special program inspiring to both young and old. After the program, give me a call at 402-376-1661 or come see me if you're looking for a new or used vehicle. And now, here is today's edition of Sand Hill Stories.
Welcome to Sand Hill Stories, where we dive into the rich history and untold tales of the Nebraska Sandhills, stories of resilience, hard work, and the people who have shaped this land for generations. Today, we're taking you 10 miles south of Valentine and investigating the roots of the Lovejoy ranching legacy. I'm joined by Janie Swanson, who is married to Randy. Randy is the sixth generation Cherry County resident from Chalmers Lovejoy, who came to Cherry County in 1884. Janie, you were volunteered to join us on Sandhill Stories, and I'm so glad to have this time with you. I'm in awe of the artifacts that your family has preserved through the years. Thank you for coming in.
Well, you're welcome.
Let's start, Janie. I think one of the most intriguing things is this says, letter by Fred Lovejoy. Can you tell me about this letter?
Fred was 7 years old when they came to Cherry County. And Jenny Haar, Lovejoy, to keep her son busy, she had him write what he saw along the way and what was happening. So that kind of took care of him, because she also had a daughter with her at that time that was an infant. And so Fred wrote down with pencil all the things that he saw. Well, the letter was kept for a long time, or diary. And then when Fred was like 78 years old, one of the kids asked him to go back over it, because it wasn't really legible and the spelling was not good. It was a seven-year-old. And put it back into words and his own handwriting as an adult. And so we have that original, but it's very hard to read. So my daughter, Julie, went ahead and typed it. And as you read it, sometimes it doesn't flow like a story. It just kind of has thoughts here and there. And he didn't write it all at one time. He might have wrote one day and then several days had passed and he'd write again. So that's why it doesn't have that constant flow. But it tells about coming out here in the wagon and the people they met and how hard it was to get water. And they stayed with the Hannas for a while, and the Hannas directed them towards Wood Lake. And when they first started, they had to cross the Missouri on a ferry. And of course, there was no way to cross anymore, like the Dismal River or any more rivers that we had up here, with a ferry. There were no ferries. So the trip was a zigzag. They went to Broken Bow and they headed towards Chokecherry Creek, and they met these people along the way. And sometimes they found water, but the water they couldn't drink. And so it's just kind of a recollection of a seven-year-old.
I just want to read, since you said Broken Bow, I just glanced down when you said that. When we got to the town called Broken Bow, we camped overnight. We veered south by west until we came to the South Loop River, then on westward until the river became dry. As we were driving along that evening looking for a place to camp, we met a cowboy. We stopped, he stopped, and Father asked the cowboy about camping, where water could be had for the horses. He said there is no water, and we would have to make a dry camp or haul water with us. This is incredible.
If you go on to the next page, it talks about staying at the Hannas. They got to the Hanna Ranch, and the Hannas talked them into staying 3 days.
I don't know if this is the right spot. My eyes just fell to this. It was getting awfully sandy, and we all had to get out and walk to lighten the wagon for the horses. Uncle Peril carried Brother Bob, and Mother carried Sister Anna, the baby. I, Fred, carried an empty water jug. The cowboy said there had been 2,800 head of cattle driven over the trail, and 2,300 had died of Texas fever. The wagon road had been trampled out of sight, so we now had a high range of hills before us to climb. We thought when we got to the top, we would be beyond the hills. Not so when we reached the top, there were another high range of sand hills. We had to rest the horses again.
They had a hard time, and they didn't make very many miles in a day because the horses couldn't take the sand. It was such a hard pull, and they didn't ride in the wagons, like he said.
This is just incredible. that he actually did this, and his mother, it's funny, she was keeping him busy, but it's now a treasure for your family and for us who get to learn from it.
It is. It's really nice. My granddaughter right now is in fourth grade, and they are doing pioneer history. And today she hauled a butter churn to school, and we have a lot of things on the ranch. One thing about the Lovejoys, if they got it, they never sold it, gave it away, or did anything. It just stayed in one spot. And so she's been able to take a lot of things to help their studies.
Where does she go to school?
She goes here in Valentine at the elementary school.
Okay, good. Okay, so they eventually landed, and then they homesteaded. And you actually brought in with you copies of the one Homestead Act, and then you have others at home. But let's get that out and look at the date of it.
Okay, when Chalmers got here, he had a paper for 360 acres for his homestead. And then the longer he stayed here, he was a real workaholic. He was just always doing things. And his homestead happened to be near a meadow, and they put up meadow hay. And to make extra money, he would sell the hay to the fort where the soldiers were for their horses. And so as he progressed on, he got a little extra money. He would lend the money out to other homesteaders. And when they could not pay it back, then he would take their homestead in place of payment. And the one I brought in today is signed by President Grover Cleveland. And it was granted to Renee Kinnett. And the Kinnetts had a ranch. When Chalmers had his, and then each time a child was born, he had nine children, he would get a homestead, 360 acres for them. And then he also invested in a bank. And when they loaned money, if the homesteader could not pay, then Chalmers would pay their loan off in exchange for their homestead papers. And so he added land that way.
You actually brought in a hot plate from, it says, compliments of the Lovejoy Mercantile Company, Valentine, Nebraska. And around the edges, it's got the calendar year, and the year is 1929. Tell me about, you were saying how if you borrowed money, there's just so many things we don't think about, but when he owned part of the bank, when you borrowed money at the bank and you wrote a note, tell me about the note process.
When we were going through some things, we found a shoebox. And in the shoebox were banknotes that people had borrowed money from the bank that he had interest in. And on the front side, it would have the person's name and how much it was and the name of the bank and everything. And then whatever they borrowed, they signed on a line near the bottom. Well, if they came in, and some notes, you would turn them over, and they might come in and only put 50 cents down on that note, or a dollar, or sometimes $5. And they would write the date and how much they put down on their note, and then whoever took the money, a cashier or whoever, would initial it. When the note was paid off, they would take the note and they'd put the final payment on the back, and then they would take the note and just tear off the signature of that person, and they would hand that signature back to them. So they no longer were responsible for that note because their signature was not on the note. But the bank kept them as records of, you know, money borrowed and paid back. And we found a shoebox with lots of them. And at first it took us a while to figure out why all of the signatures were missing. And then, of course, we had other people that told us what had happened. But there was no carbon paper, no way to make duplicates. And so that's how they kept their banking business. It was kind of different.
That's so interesting. I'm just going to pull up. We have some things sitting out here. Article of Agreement from Captain John Baxter Jr., I think. Oh, this is for the hay.
Yes, this is from the fort. The United States government would write out a contract to Chalmers Lovejoy in payment for hay, and they would he would put up meadow hay in the summer, and then they would put it on a sled, because it would be in stacks, and haul it out to the fort east of Valentine, and the hay was for the horses for the soldiers.
And this was $200,
mm-hmm.
which I bet was a fortune.
A lot of money then.
Yes. And the date is January of 1899.
And then that money he would also put back into parts of the bank and the other things that he was an entrepreneur. He was always trying to make money, always.
Once again, this is Dean from Tarani Motors. We hope you enjoyed today's edition of Sandhills Stories. I invite you to stop by Tarani Motors for your next service or your next vehicle. Tune in again next week for the next edition of Sandhills Stories.